Hello, welcome to this week's Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast. We come to you in the wake of a 3-0 defeat at Wolves. We couldn't bring ourselves to record a pod on the way home. It was a long Sunday, so we've reconvened on Monday. Once we've had a little bit of a chance to calm down, to reflect, I'm afraid it's not looking any better. The position in the table's not looking any better, but we will do our best to take it apart in the next 30 to 45 minutes or so with you guys. I am Dave Freezer, your host. We're also coming to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. I'm joined by Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell. And yeah, it wasn't the most fun of days, was it, Pad? Because we had a lovely little diversion on the way home.
Oh, you've stolen my thunder, Dave. I thought the most important thing of the day was the 30-minute delay on the A14. Highways Agency, shocking. Symptomatic of an instantly forgettable trip to Wolverhampton, so all in all, pretty diabolical, and I'm fuming.
I have to admit that I was a little bit unaware of it, because I don't normally do this, but I was just a little bit fed up with the football, so I thought, I'm just going to chill out for an hour here. Watched a series that I've been watching on Now TV on my phone, and just watched that for sort of whatever it was, 50 minutes, an episode of The Newsroom. Very good show if you've not watched it. And then looked up as I got to the end of the episode, and I was like, Pad, where are we? we're not nearly back in Norfolk, we're near Peterborough. And yeah, that certainly didn't help our day. And we got there a bit late as well, didn't we, because of problems on the M6. So all in all, that didn't help with the mood. And yeah, it's been, well, amongst the Norwich fans generally, Connor, it was a pretty dark day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think perhaps the only positive I can put on it is that they're in no worse a situation than they yeah. were when they rocked up at Molineux, albeit perhaps with a better goal difference and a bit more confidence. But yeah, it wasn't a great day at all. I think beyond the first 10 minutes, it was devoid of any quality from Norwich City. I think beyond Tim Krul, it's probably hard to pinpoint a player who put in a decent shift. I mean, I'm trying to think here now, and there's not one that immediately springs to mind. I think probably Tetti leads the queue, but that's not exactly glowing praise of him. And it was just a poor day all round. A lot of white flag waving, I felt, from on the pitch. And it really looked to me like the first afternoon, perhaps beyond Old Trafford, where they've just lacked belief and they've lacked a little bit of heart, I suppose, at what they're doing. And it feels like the confidence has gone, the belief has gone, and it kind of feels like they're a squad that knows which direction they're heading in now. And ultimately, they've got 11 games left to try and salvage something. But you have to say any sort of hope of a great escape or something miraculous is based purely on hope and prayer, as opposed to any sort of evidence that we've seen in recent weeks, because it's all been certainly from a results point of view not very positive at all. So difficult afternoon, difficult to know how they pick themselves up from here, difficult to know how they respond. I suppose they've got to go and prove people wrong now. They've got to go and prove that actually they still have belief in their ability, and obviously it's a massive test on Friday night before everyone else plays on the Saturday. And I think more than anything else, it was that opportunity that they missed to reduce that gap and give themselves a fighting chance. But you have to say it looks pretty bleak at the moment, I think, and bleak for their prospects for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that sort of opportunity, I think, is what really led to the disappointment. Was this wasn't the Liverpool game. This was, you know, starting again. If you could get that spark, Villa had lost on the Saturday. They knew that they could cut that gap to safety to 4 points. Watford also lost 3-0 at Man United at the same time. West Ham, we're recording Monday afternoon. They're at Liverpool tonight, aren't they? That would be a massive shock if they get anything at Anfield. So it felt like a big opportunity missed. Also, I'll just say now, we've got some of what Alex Tetti had to say after the game that really worth listening to. We'll bring that to you a little bit later. And also, Connor spoke to Tim Closer on Friday to get an update on where he is at with returning to full training from his injury. But yeah, Pad, that sense of disappointment, that darkness among the Norwich fans, that sort of, this was the day that we really lost hope and faith. I think that was because of that, wasn't it? That it sensed an opportunity, because Wolves had played on the Thursday night. Norwich had all week to prepare for it, and there was just that little bit of hope that if there was going to be one of the teams they could upset, this was one of those opportunities.
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, how many cards do they want in their favour? You've mapped them all out there, and for me, to come off the back of, and you didn't get a point, but how resolute and uplifting was that performance against Liverpool barely 6-7 days previous, and not to at least harness the confidence. They were cheered off at Carrow Road that day. To a man, Daniel Farker cheered off. They've lost, okay, but that was the level of their performance individually, collectively. To go from that to what they showed at Molineux, which was nothing. You know, Daniel, I don't quite know where he was coming from in his post-match dissection, that they started well and they were on the front foot and, you know, they were the dominant team. I mean, they wasn't the dominant team at all. Let's get it straight. I mean, Wolves did what they do anyway, which is they sit in, they counter-attack teams. They're very strong across the back, whether it's a 3 or a 5. In Patricio, they've got one of the best keepers in the division. They just sat there and quite happily allowed Norwich to play in front of them, and everything was sideways or backwards. No penetration, no guile. One chance maybe for Pukki at the near post, but symptomatic of his season since the turn of the year. No belief, really. Rupp had a chance but didn't want to pull the trigger on his left. But that, for me, is the nub of it, is where what has gone on in the intervening period from Liverpool, then those are favourable results, then Wolves playing midweek, so you've got an extra upside in terms of the preparation from Norwich, to turn that performance in. Lowest point of the season for me, that was, because Manchester United, as bad as they were that day, United were very good, and you know they've got some excellent attacking players, Marcus Rashford notable among them. So you could almost, because that was an anomaly in the period that had sort of preceded that run. But there's no excuses for Wolves. You know, we saw at Carrow Road, Norwich were as good as Wolves for most part, and probably better. And it was only Patricio that day and his shot stopping ability that really kept them in the game. And then they obviously ground Norwich down in the second half, which is a theme we've seen too often. You know, it's like Norwich knock on the door, maybe get their noses in front by the odd goal, but you never feel that they're going to go on then and put teams away. And inevitably what happens is they seem to run into a mental and physical fatigue, and manage to end up contriving to lose games more often than not from having established a very strong position. So, you know, there's no way to dress it up. Unfortunately, that is a team who... a name only for me. You know, there was far too many individuals who didn't look like they were too bothered. And okay, you know, you can look at the likes of Young Godfrey and Jamal haven't played a lot of football, but so there might be other factors in play, but collectively and individually that team looked like a team that know the writing's on the wall, and now unfortunately individual priorities will take over and it's about where am I going to be next season, sadly.
Yeah, and that's 3 games in a row that they haven't scored. 1 win in 14 in the league. Lots of horrible stats we can throw at it, but let's just pause. Let's hear what Alex Tetti had to say when I spoke to him after the game. He also finishes with a bit on Emi Buendia, who we haven't mentioned yet, but we certainly will be after this interview is played from Alex, because he is the man that everyone's talking about at the moment. You've seen everything at Norwich City, so what sort of advice can you give to the young lads in this? It's a difficult situation, isn't it, at the moment?
Yes, it is. At the moment, I need someone to give me advice, but yeah. Because it is extremely tough after this game. Extremely tough, because I think we can do much, much better. And as I said to them in there, everything that happened from 20th minute on, that's not us. That's a standard individually. We should not have in this game. And I think we had everything from not really going 100% in first, second ball, passes work great. I think it was not there, and that is extremely, extremely, extremely disappointing from our point of view today. That includes me, as I said to them in there. I'm extremely disappointed to be one of the senior members in there and be on the pitch and wanting to do more but not doing more, it is extremely disappointing. You just need to put our hands up and say today we were not good enough. We apologise to the away fans, and we need to get ourselves going again on Friday, because what we did today, that's not good enough.
at the end of the day, like today, you know, you have bad days in football. They come, don't they? Do you just have to sort of leave each other alone in the dressing room, or do you need to sort of get things off your chest quickly?
No, I think personally, now I don't need someone to talk to me. I don't want to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it has to be. I think it's individually, people take it differently. And for now, I just want to get home as quick as possible and hopefully, I don't know, next day talk about it and just leave it.
The second goal, I guess, is one that's particularly frustrating, but the short corner, because I'm sure that's one that you guys will have worked on, targeted, knew they were going to do.
They are good in the air. Surprisingly, the ball came and I think they got their head first to it.
Yeah,
and then we are all going out, and then for some reason they have more men at the back than what we did, and they scored, and that, you know, it's very frustrating. Even the first goal, we have numbers in the box and they still managed to score. The third goal as well, it's easily we can avoid that, but we did it. So
it was a little unlucky, the third goal, wasn't it? Because Jamal had sort of got
but once again, it's the situation before it happened, yeah. You know,
I won't ask you too much about your new contract because it's sort of wrong time for it.
I think maybe I'll give that up today. After today, maybe. But I will have a second thought about that. But no, personally, I'm very extremely disappointed. I can't. This is the first time in this season I can say, for me personally, that that was not great.
But in terms of overall, you've signed that contract, so you obviously have faith in what the club are trying to do, the direction that Stuart's going in.
The direction and what the club is doing, that's the only way for a club like Norwich.
Yeah.
We don't have the money to buy all these big stars. You don't. There is no one behind the club. There are people, good people behind the club, and the way they are doing things is the only way for Norwich. You know, and Stuart is doing a fantastic job. There can't be any other guy who can come in and say, listen, this. You are getting these young players, they are developing. Yes, everything takes time in football when you are young, but they've done well. Some of them this season haven't played Premier League football before, and you look at Max, Ben, Jamal, they have taken it really well, and they have to keep going. Us being the Premier League, yes, they didn't count on it, but we are here, and they've decided to go the way they went about it, and there's no regret about it. So you just need to keep moving forward, and I'm sure Stuart and Delia and Michael, they know what they are doing with the manager as well. So I really believe in that. If not, I wouldn't have been here and signed that contract. But so yeah.
One other little thing with the contract is you're very close to moving into the top 50 all-time appearances. Martin Peters is in 50th, who was a World Cup winner. So did sort of continuing to sort of really write your name into the history books for Norwich, was that sort of part of your thinking as well, really wanting to sort of leave your imprint behind with the club?
No. Whenever I'm finished with Norwich, if my name is somewhere, it's good. But I personally don't think like that. You know, if you're in the books, you're in the books because of what you've done and the work you've put in. So, if I'm here and I'm doing everything to help the team and get games, it's great. You know, if I don't get games, I'm backing the lads up. So, my mind is never on records or being here to get a testimonial. Or I personally even have told Stuart I don't want to have a testimonial or anything. So
don't like the attention.
No, it would be too much me, and that's not me. I'm here. I'm trying to do my best. I've always done that, and that's why I'm here. I'm still here.
Just one from me, Alex. There was quite a bit from Daniel on Emi before the game, and I think a lot of fans want to see Emi starting. What do you make of that situation? And I mean, are you as players having to speak to Emi? Because it seems like Daniel clearly wants more from him, and he's such an important player to you, isn't he?
It is. Emi, with his right mind. An attitude in place, fantastic player. He's shown that with his assist and the way he's played, with his passion and everything. not everyone is at the training ground day in, day out. So you guys don't know everything that's going on. And it's the manager's right to... He's the boss. He sees things and he handles things the way he wants to handle it. I personally talk to Emmy whenever he's done something wrong or doesn't do anything. I go to him and tell him because I'm not afraid to tell him, listen, you this. And then as a good lad as he is, he takes it in the right direction and he works hard. So this is something that there is no bad or anything going on. It's just the manager sees what he sees in training and body language and attitude wise, and then he picks the team what he thinks or who he thinks will do well for the team. So there's nothing bad going on there. The manager very, very much adore and likes Emmy's football and the way he plays. So he'll be quickly back in contention again. I'm not worried about that.
So yes, interesting stuff there from Alex. A bit of an insight into the dressing room, because obviously everything that's happened with Emmy, there's been a lot said, spoken, written about him. He seems to be the one that everyone's talking about, and I think Alex has tried to give an impression there of what is the reality of it, and you know, we all know how brutally honest Alex Tetti can be in front of a microphone. Sometimes it's almost like he doesn't trust himself, isn't it? So we don't always get to speak to him. That is the first time we've spoken to him since he signed that new 1-year contract, and of course he's joked there about perhaps he should give it back, which is a little bit of dark humour on a dark day. You know, we see that their faces after these games, don't we? And they all were so despondent, so disappointed. It really was a bad day for them. But from the moment the teams dropped, you kind of knew that there was going to be a big story one way or the other. Daniel Farke keeps Emi Buendia on the bench, third game in succession, which was, it should be pointed out, started by him missing the game at Tottenham with a thigh injury, wasn't it? So it wasn't... He wasn't dropped for that game, which I think some people seem to have missed a little bit. Three games in a row that he's been a substitute. He comes on with it already 3-0 on the hour. Him and Dermot are both thrown on. The big thing for me was that he didn't come on at half time, really, or that Daniel didn't make any changes at half time. But he decided to stick with Emi on the bench from the beginning of the game. And ever since, that's really been the big talking point, hasn't it, Connor?
Yeah, it has. I mean, even when that team news dropped yesterday, I did feel it was a little bit safe. When you think about what Daniel Farke has done since he joined the club, in terms of the direction he's wanted to take it, in terms of embedding young talent, maybe not him signing the players from the lower tiers of Germany, but certainly being involved in that and throwing them in and moulding a team, it kind of feels like he's lost his way a little bit in terms of how he perceives risk. And okay, in the Premier League, the teams are ruthless, you get punished a little bit more, but I think Norwich City have lost a little bit of their identity, and I think this is a good situation that sort of shows that a little bit on the pitch in terms of Emi Buendia's absence. Because and I think Lucas Rupp has had a lot of unfair criticism this weekend, and he's almost a scapegoat for Emi Buendia not playing. I don't think that's necessarily fair, because it's not his fault, and he does offer a bit more security, he does offer a bit more protection. But yeah, from an offensive perspective, he doesn't offer you probably 10 times or 10 times less than Emi Buendia does. So I can understand the frustration aimed at Rupp, and I can understand the frustration with Emi Buendia not being involved. But the reality is, one player, as good as he is and as good as his numbers are, however you want to contextualise them, isn't going to change Norwich City's attacking output that much. And again, we can all throw the creative stats that he's produced this season. Look at the goals scored that Norwich have this season. Their top scorer is on 11 goals, Cantwell's on 6. Beyond that, we're reduced to sort of twos and ones. So as much as Emi Buendia is pivotal and he's crucial to what they do from an attacking sense, he isn't the oracle. He isn't the one man who's going to change their season. They need other sources of creativity, and look, ultimately if it's me and Emi Buendia is fit and he's available, then I think he goes in the starting lineup, because he's one of those players, and we saw how Jota changed the game yesterday with his individual quality. Sometimes you need that, especially in the Premier League, and Buendia does have it and does possess it, but equally he needs a bit more out of those in front of him and a bit more from those alongside him to chip in as well, because you put an over-reliance on, I mean, he's still a young player, still 22, on his shoulders, and ultimately that expectation is going to be too much for him to break through. So it's a difficult situation. It for me, and again, they were hesitant in possession. I don't think they progressed the ball particularly well. Todd Cantwell certainly tried in situations, but they really lacked pace, and as Paddy said earlier, penetration. He provides penetration, certainly, in the way he plays. He's always looking to receive the ball, and they need a little bit of that confidence in possession, I think, because there was a just ponderous, I think, was the word that I'd use. It was a little bit aimless. They resorted to long balls in the second half. It was quite attritional in the second half. Some of the balls they played, certainly in the early period, but it just feels like they've lost their way. And I think for me now, it's all about how they restore that identity that we saw last season in terms of free flowing attacking football. Because if not, and they do go down in this way, then it's going to be very hard to take any sort of confidence or any sort of momentum into the Championship, which is pivotal. You can look at Huddersfield, Stoke, as well as examples of how that can go. Wolves from years gone by. So it's incredibly difficult, but for me, and again, he may be looking ahead to the future or whatever, but in terms of restoring that, I think Emi Buendia is crucial. So for me, I'd get him back in the team as soon as possible, starting on Friday.
Yeah, very good points. 60% possession Norwich had in this game. So I think certainly that last half an hour, Wolves just sat deep and said, go on then, you're not going to do us any damage. Crack on, boys. And they didn't, did they? I mean, 60% of possession, had far more passes, but one corner, zero offsides. That basically shows that they're not getting in behind, are they? Let's just take a little step back, Cleopad. The context to all of this came from your question to Mr. Farker at the pre-match press conference on Friday, didn't it? Where you sparked a seven-minute monologue from the Norwich boss, who certainly went on an eye-catching rant, I think it's fair to say.
Let me tell you, that's a lot of typing. People don't see the amount of transcription I have to do when Daniel decides to go War and Peace. But yeah, and that was along the lines of, as you said there earlier, he'd not played or he'd not started the last two league games. And also in the context of what he did against Wolves previously, why wouldn't you want to bring him back? It felt like the perfect opportunity to get him back in. No doubt hoping for the reaction he got when he dropped him out before Christmas, when he came roaring back and was, well, you saw, I mean, we're talking a lot about his numbers, but, you know, around that December-January period, I mean, he got shortlisted, didn't he, for Premier League Player of the Year, of the Month. So that underlines how well he came back into the side. So why wouldn't you want to maybe try and repeat that again? And what we're talking about here is they've lost their spark. You know, the pilot light has gone out. So why couldn't he have provided that if he'd have got anywhere near his performance when Wolves came to Carr Road? And we wouldn't be sat here sort of sifting through the wreckage. It'd be right, the great escape is on now. You know, Leicester had come, closed the gap, cashed in on defeats for other teams, and unfortunately Daniel decided that it wasn't the right time to bring him back in. But going back to what you said at Colney on Friday, in a very lengthy analytical forensic breakdown, it was essentially that Emi Buendia isn't offering him what he feels is enough to influence games at this level. He can do it in the Championship at 95%, was the figure he quoted, but he needs to be 100%, and he doesn't feel, as he says, from somebody who sees him day in, day out in training, that he is at his 100% best. And because of that, we touched on it, he clearly has felt in recent games at least that Rupp offers more individually and collectively within the team unit. So I don't see it personally, not the situation they're in now. Daniel himself says they need 6 to 7 wins, it's probably more than that now. Well, if you're going to need somebody to put into a team to try and win games, because they haven't done that anywhere near enough, then Emi Buendia is a shoehorn for me. And I think you'd start to see a bit better from Duda. Duda seems to have dramatically declined since that Bournemouth debut. And let's not forget, Bournemouth, it was him, Cantwell and Buendia in tandem, like the Red Arrows behind Pookie, and they were very good that day. So I think you'd also see the uplift he would have on the players around him. And I know Timu is quite rightly getting a lot of focus for his lack of goals in open play, but one thing with Buendia in the side, he would still continue to get chances. And the reality is, you would think if he kept getting chances, he would eventually break that hoodoo, and that might kick him on again. So for me, Buendia, it's not Buendia per se as an individual, it's the effect he has on the others around him. And, you know, for a team who have massively struggled to score goals, particularly away from home, I mean, they're in single figures this season, the only team left in the Premier League who have yet to get double figures in terms of goals scored on the road. I really don't fathom it at all. And it's hard to see where Buendia goes from here. I think, you know, without over-analysing too much, but the recent events, i.e. from what Daniel said at Colney on Friday to, again, Emmy not playing on Saturday to, again, when he did come on, what he didn't do, and the petulance again, the full-time whistle straight down the tunnel, not acknowledging the fans or his teammates. I think we might have gone too far the other way now, and it'll be a case of get to the end of the season, and sadly, I think Emi Buendia will not be a Norwich player.
Well, let's hope that things improve on that, because I think that's what a lot of this frustration stems from, is that Norwich fans desperately want to see Buendia play, don't they? We all know how good he is. We've all heard the creative stats. We've all seen the impact, the flicks and tricks. He's a special player when he's on his day, and he should be the star of the show, really, for Norwich. So that's where this sort of pain is stemming from, isn't it? But, yeah, in my video verdict, which you can always watch after the games on our YouTube channel and Facebook page, I said that I thought it was immature, the way he played, but when they actually finished the game, when the final whistle went, he was still on his backside near the Wolves penalty area after trying to basically run through three men, throw his hands up in the air. Wolves have gone up the other end. They put the ball in the corner to waste a bit of time. Buendia is still sat there moaning to himself, and he's quite near the away fans who have made all that effort to be there. He doesn't turn and applaud them. He just goes straight for the tunnel, ignores everyone, absolutely raging. And to me, he's just creating himself a problem he doesn't need to there, because, you know, it's like a pointed decision that I'm going to storm off here. I'm going to show that I'm angry. If he just turns to those fans, holds his hands up, quick applause, and then he goes off down the tunnel, then that avoids any, you know, pundits, fans, coaches, whoever, being able to have that sort of controversial line about him. Why does he do it? That hints at an immaturity, and that he can't, you know, use his emotions as well as he should be able to, and that he's not handling the pressure of the Premier League. But we all know, one assist, one goal, that will flick the switch, and hopefully, hopefully, we'll get to see the proper Emi Buendia again, and this horrible little patch can end for him. But just finally, because Norwich's problems aren't only Emi Buendia at the moment. That's not the only reason they are bottom of the table. Far from it. The actual 30 minutes he was on the pitch, Connor, he didn't do enough, did he? There was a lot of that immaturity in terms of trying to beat everyone on his own.
Yeah, there was, yeah. And that's the negative side of him, isn't it? I think you either have to start him or he doesn't feature at all, because I think as a substitute, certainly from the evidence of this season, he doesn't look like he can contribute because of what you said there, because of handling his emotions. If he is angry at not playing, I think that doesn't necessarily reflect positively in his performance. Some players need that to actually perform, and he doesn't seem like one of those that's capable of processing it and using it in a different way. So it's, for all of his positive elements, there are a lot of negative as well, and that's why Norwich can't be over-reliant on him, and that's why they do need the likes of Campbell has been very good for the most part this season, but particularly him in areas. Duda as well is another one who, since that Bournemouth debut, has tailed off dramatically. So they do need a bit more, and also from midfield positions as well. Kenny McLean and Alex Tetti, yes, they do provide security, but Norwich need a bit more than defensive security at the moment. They actually need to go and try and score goals, and that may be points, which I'm sure we'll come on to later on, towards perhaps a more technical option in that midfield area, and you have to say Mario Vrančić, I think, is the obvious contender for that, so that's a solution to it as well. But Daniel Farke has to look at the wider unit, and I think we've all played football at various levels, maybe not all positively, but
you higher than us, I
believe. Well, I won't go into that, but I think when you've got a player like that on the pitch and on your team, you notice, and it does have an effect, and not positive either. I think people do notice, and there are points, and we've all had that kid in the playground that doesn't pass to anyone. It's kind of a bit like that, isn't it? And it is frustrating for everyone else. But Buendia needs to curve it, and if he is to go on to reach the heights that many expect, and that he certainly can with his ability, that's something he's going to have to improve. But as I keep mentioning, he's so young, so you'd hope by now he would have learnt to sort of harness that a little bit, but he hasn't have yet.
Yeah, just well, to close the Buendia segment, Pad, we did get one question in, which sort of caps us off nicely on Twitter from Dave Williams, who says, will the act of leaving Buendia out of the team reduce the price we get for him at the end of the season, like Oliveira?
No, I don't think so. I think clubs will look at these numbers and that they will have a value in mind. I don't think it'll, you know, by inference there, I don't think these telephone numbers I see for him or the Godfreys in this world, you can forget that. That's not going to happen. There's no way those young Norwich players have done enough now for me to be commanding A, the type of club they're getting linked with, and B, the figures that are being talked. I think there needs to be a lot more realism. Stuart Webber, when we sat down with him last week, made it clear, you know, the big clubs don't conduct their business through you know, the gossip columns of tabloid newspapers. So, you know, dismiss, and it's very hard to do it because it feels incessant and constant, especially during the actual transfer windows, but there needs to be a lot of more realism. You know, I've seen all sorts on social media that Norwich are going to be banking 150, 200 million in the summer from selling four or five players. Not going to happen. And for me, if I'm maybe Buendia, then I'm probably looking at a mid-ranking Premier League team. At this stage, he hasn't done enough for me to be anywhere near a top six club. So, you know, that's why I thought a Wolves, for example, probably harsh to call him mid-ranking, but you're sort of pushing on into the fringes of the top six, fine. But no, I don't, because I think those clubs will have made their mind up. You can imagine Nuno Espirito when he was down here at Carrow Road, it would have been, wow, who is this kid, if they didn't already know. And from that point onwards, a club like Wolves, their analysts will be going into every detail. They will know the numbers. What might be a slight issue is if they do the old character profiles and they can see the petulance as much as we all can. So, you know, there might be a flag or two raised against him. But in terms of his ability, and I think most clubs would think at his age, he's only going to go one way. He's got the raw materials. So, I don't think, to answer the question, it will affect the price necessarily by not playing for the last 10 games or so. But by the same token, I think people need to be aware of the prices that maybe quoted in gossip columns aren't necessarily what Norwich would be able to bank.
Right, that's the Buendia files closed for the time being. We'll just take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Archon Podcasts, and if you ever get an opportunity to leave us a review or a rating on your chosen podcast provider, that would be very much appreciated. And of course, we are coming to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. You can hear us on their radio station online or on the radio if you want to go old school on a Wednesday evening. Right, next we're moving on to the defence, and there were two changes. They were enforced. Christoph Zimmermann and Sam Byram both ruled out with injuries. Ben Godfrey, Jamal Lewis both come in, and Godfrey in particular struggled, didn't he, Connor? He was playing that right side of defence alongside Hanley, where he usually plays on the left of Zimmermann, doesn't he? But I don't think that was the only problem. That was maybe a contributory factor, but he just didn't look himself, did he? He looked, I don't know if maybe he's not fully fit or whether he's been distracted by transfer rumours and things like that, but that didn't look like the Ben Godfrey that we've seen most of the season.
No, I think that's probably the worst I've seen him play this season, if not for in a Norwich shirt, to be honest. It wasn't. I mean, usually he's the one that looks a bit more composed in possession. I thought he was a bit rash. We saw that with a Yota chance earlier on, which he played across to Jimenez, which Lewis cleared. It just wasn't a particularly great day for him. He looked quite sluggish, and again, maybe match fitness is a factor. I mean, Daniel referenced the fact he hasn't played a full 90 minutes since Leicester in December, so that could be a factor. It's difficult to know without access to almost his physical data, I suppose, but in terms of his performance, yeah, it wasn't great at all. It wasn't great, and again, I think the numbers say it all. The fact that Norwich's defence had gone from conceding one goal in two games against Newcastle and Liverpool to three against Wolves and looked pretty open and pretty exposed when they did turn the ball over and did find Jimenez and Jota. I think that says it all. Stretched, it didn't look particularly organised, and again, that's not his fault. It was two new components into a defence, I suppose, and that never gives you particular security unless you're particularly well structured, and Norwich haven't been defensively structured for the most part, albeit they have improved, I think, recently. But it was it's a strange partnership, that one, because it's one that they tried at the start of the season. I know Hanley wasn't fully fit and it didn't quite work, and they've tried it again, obviously through necessity this time, and Godfrey didn't look particularly fully fit either. So it's a difficult situation, because I don't think Christoph Zimmermann had been performing particularly expertly, but Norwich's defence as a whole, and it again comes down to this argument of individual performance over what they offer the team, Norwich's defence looked more assured with him in it and looked a bit more physically robust, I think, and Daniel Farker described
aerially as well.
Yeah, and Daniel Farker described him as soft yesterday, didn't he? And it did feel soft, particularly that first goal where Jota receives it in the box, turns past Aarons and unleashes the shot. I mean, it was a bit soft, and I'm not saying it was Godfrey's fault because of that, but he was one of those defensive players, so he gets looked at. I don't think the shield for the defence was particularly great either. Again, that extends perhaps beyond Alex Tetti and to the midfield generally. It just feels like the whole balance of the team wasn't quite right from a defensive perspective or an offensive perspective. And when you think about that formula, it's not a particularly successful recipe for success, I'm afraid. And same old story, I suppose, in many elements. They were particularly good. They had some decent passages between both boxes, but in terms of their defensive box and the attacking box, they didn't have enough, and they weren't ruthless enough. And you get punished at this level, and it feels like they need, what, five chances for every goal they score, and their opponents need probably two. And that's the season in a nutshell. But yeah, Ben Godfrey, not great. Lewis probably a little bit better in his 1v1 defending, but again was part of that defence, wasn't he? So it's incredibly difficult, but a day to forget for him, I think.
Didn't cover himself in glory for the first goal, Lewis, did he? Got beaten by Doherty out wide, and for me, I think they never really dealt with Wolves' shape, which was sort of a 3-4-3, but once they were in front, it was kind of like a 3-6-1 a lot of the time, wasn't it? They just absolutely packed out the midfield. I'll come to Pad about Lewis if he's still alive. So struggling a little bit with a cold, aren't you?
Just a bit, mate. Yeah.
So I'll
it's the most sense I've made on this podcast for the last God knows how long.
Yes, Jamal comes in. I mean, there's no choice there, is it? Because Byram's season is essentially over. He was sort of a mixture of good and bad. Actually, while you were talking there, Connor, just let you get your breath back. You mentioned the shield in defensive midfield as well. Kenny McLean, having been pretty good recently and consistent, had a real bad day, didn't he? He was... It just... Nothing happened for him, and he just looked a bit like... I felt like that whenever I play any sport, whether it be badminton, tennis, football, golf... I've had those days where you play well one week. Golf's a good example, actually, isn't it? Because you have a good round and then you think, oh, I might actually get into this golf. And then you have another round and you're absolutely terrible. And that's what his face looked like on Sunday. He was like, what's going on?
It happens to everyone, doesn't it? I think in whatever line you do, some days are better than others. And I mean, he's not the only one, is he? But I don't think it was a particularly great day all round for... As I said at the top end of the show, I didn't think there was really beyond Tim Krul, who made a couple of excellent saves actually from two Neves's free kicks. There weren't really many who stood out at all, and he was certainly towards the bottom end, I think. And to be fair, I think he tends to be relatively consistent, so perhaps he has been due an off day. I don't think he's ever exceptional, but he's never... Well, I don't think I've seen him as poor as that, but yeah, just one of those days, bad day at the office, whatever you want to call it, part of a poor side on a bad day, and pretty much everything that could have gone wrong did, apart from a red card or a VAR decision. So, there we go. I think for Kenny as a whole, I think, again, he's another one, I think, who's been a bit... unfairly criticised this year because people want to see Vrančić and they want to see more technical players, but you have to look at what he offers the team in the midfield as a whole, and he has offered a bit more balance in that midfield area, because Norwich did try, and they did try with Tetti and a technical player, or Tribal and a technical player, and that came with the risk that they looked a bit less defensively solid. So I get the sacrifice, but again, it kind of comes back to now they're in an element where they do need to take those risks. And I fear he may not be one, or he may be one that we don't see on Friday night at the expense of perhaps someone who can do a bit more in possession.
Right, Pad is fit to give us a fitness bulletin and update, because
is it his own fitness bulletin?
Well, he can start on that front, but then the injuries are sort of having an impact now, aren't they? It sounds like Zimmerman and particularly Hernandez could be out for a while.
Yeah, certainly in Arnell's case, excuse me, a bit worrying. That, I mean, basically, we asked Daniel straight after the game Sunday, and on going into it, if anybody's unaware, still that Arnell had damaged his knee midweek in training. And Daniel said there's still no final decision, but having visited a specialist, it sounds like he may need surgery again. And that is concerning for the simple reason it's the same knee that he was out with for 3 or 4 months at the start of the season, which he injured in that freak accident at his home. So if we don't see Arnell for the rest of the season and he has to have another surgery on his knee, then it goes without saying that you start to worry then moving forward. But certainly not going to be, it sounds like, although Daniel will confirm it when we speak to him again later in the week, that Arnell isn't in the mix for Leicester. And Christophe, well, yeah, he went into the game 95% out, and as it turned out, that was accurate. And Daniel still says, even with a couple more days since we spoke to him on Friday, that he's still a major doubt. And again, you got the distinct impression that we probably wouldn't need to worry about Christophe coming into the mix, which, given what you boys have just discussed about central defensive options, it does leave them literally down to Godfrey and Hanley again, because Tim Closer isn't still back in training, as in full team training. We saw some pictures there towards the end of last week working with the ball outside, but Daniel confirmed still yet to rejoin full training. That brings us maybe on nicely to Connor, who went and had a chat with the man himself before the Wolves game, but he's not going to be in the mix purely and simply for this Friday. So in terms of the broader discussion we've just had about defensively, I think it's probably looking like it's going to be the same back four and Krul again, and they will certainly collectively need to be far better than they were against Wolves.
Yeah, and with the main under-23s central defensive prospects all out on loan in Famewu, Bashiri, Odesina, they haven't got any cover. So they could do with Zimmerman just being on the bench at least against Leicester. And Closer really sort of comes into the conversation in terms of, you look at if they even wanted to switch to a three at the back, they can't really do it. You know, Daniel did it for the last, 20 minutes or so against Wolves, and Lewis was having to play there, but essentially was still bombing forward as a left back, so that is a bit restrictive. But as we'll hear very shortly, Tim Closer closing on a return, I guess we're probably looking at him maybe being back in the mix after the international break, something like that. But you went and spoke to him at the fan hub in the City Centre on Friday, didn't you, Connor? And he seemed like he was in good spirits.
Yeah, certainly seemed that way. I think given probably all he's been through for the last year, he was certainly reflective about that, and got the impression he certainly feels like he's on the right side of that now, which is positive news for him. He's at a stage in his career where he needs to play games, and I think he's certainly a bit more optimistic about his return than Daniel Farker has been. But he does like to play things down, doesn't he, Daniel? So perhaps understandable a little bit. I think, yeah, the international break is a good shout. He said he expects to return to training either what would have been this week or perhaps halfway through next week, which is excellent, really, considering the original diagnosis was what, till the end of the season. So again, another quick recovery or quicker than expected, and it would be a major boost for what, the last 10 games or so, if Norwich could get him back to fitness. And again, does give him the option to play that free, which, okay, it was 3-0 and Wolves had taken their foot off the accelerator a little bit, but they did look a little bit more solid in, even with Jamal Lewis at effectively left centre back, didn't they? So maybe that's an option for Friday, because Vardy's pace and particularly the creativity that Leicester have in their midfield as well, that perhaps could give them a little bit more. But they could do with Tim Closer being back ASAP, really. But you've got to be careful, because they don't want to rush him back and aggravate that knee again, because it has been, it was last season an issue, and has been this season. It's robbed him really of a whole season of Premier League football, which is a great shame after, particularly in the first half of last season, what he offered to this Norwich side. So it would have been nice to see him in there, particularly with the defensive issues, but there you go. It'll be nice to see him back when he does get back. And yeah, I would imagine that international break is probably the target.
how costly that night at Crawley was. What a grim night that was. Patrick Roberts hit the post. Amadou and Vrančić in midfield.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
You weren't there, you lucky man. We had Heiser, yeah.
The lesser spotted Heiser.
We had a horrible night on the roads that night as well, didn't we?
We did.
Let's have a bit of positivity from Mr. Closer.
Tim, so I suppose the obvious question to ask you is, how are you? How's the progress with the injury come along?
I'm very good, thank you very much. I think, you know, the injury is now at its final stage, and then we're looking, you know, around maybe a week, maybe one and a half. And then I'm hopefully fully back with the squad and ready to go out there again and compete.
I think we saw some pictures via the club's social media of you with a ball at your feet for the first time yesterday. What's it been like, that feeling, getting it back? Because it must have been a frustrating few months for you personally.
Well, I had the ball several times on my feet. It's just the cameraman was there. That was the difference. But no, it's obviously a great feeling to be out there again, just, you know, running around with no pain anymore. And it has been a long time. I mean, it's been now 6 months, I think, in total. They told me before it could be a, you know, end of season thing, but I'm very happy that I came back, you know, faster, and now I'm looking strong, I'm looking fit, and I'm, you know, just happy to be out there again and looking forward to go back out with the squad.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Right, let's see if we can squeeze a little bit more juice out of Pad before he goes back to his sick bed. You were able to have a lengthy sit down with none other than Norwich City Sporting Director Stuart Webber, exclusive chat with him last week, a long one, lots covered, and some really interesting stuff to come out of that, essentially admitting that he's let Daniel down in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, he's known for being open and honest, but even by Stuart Webber's standards, I thought that was a pretty big admission, that essentially, and obviously he probably was anticipating the question, in given that Patrick Roberts and Ibrahim Amadou were two low moves that clearly didn't work, that window wasn't good enough. And as the figurehead for the club, particularly on the recruitment side, he took up ultimate responsibility. He said he was quite happy to do so, and anybody wants to point fingers, he would accept that. And really, I suppose, if you want to underpin the whole of this podcast, pretty much everything we've talked about is they haven't had a squad fit for purpose for what they needed in the Premier League. And that really maybe does take it right back to a summer that wasn't good enough. Allied to, obviously, the restrictions they had financially. We all know they've been well documented under the self-funded model. But even within that, they would have had opportunities to do business, and Stuart himself doesn't feel they did the right business. And we'll never know now. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. But, you know, if they've got the right signings in, and of course Sam Byram has been a big hit, and nobody could dispute that that's a fine piece of business that they did there. But Josip Dermić came in then as well. That's not really worked out, you would have to say. Maybe a little bit uncharitable given his injury issues. But Ralph Farman, well, he's come in, and Tim Krul has remained the number one. So, yeah, I don't think anybody would dispute Stuart Webber's assertion that the recruitment wasn't right, and as a result, they didn't really have a squad with the depth or the quality to be able to hope for more than what they've delivered. So yeah, that was probably the headline part of that interview. But, you know, it was very, I always think with him, you know, if I was a Norwich City supporter, I'd be very happy that he was at the helm of my club, because you know, you only have to go back to one or two other predecessors in his sort of roles, chief exec / managing director, to know that Norwich haven't always been in the best of hands in terms of some of the decision making off the park, and it's so crucial. You know, let's not, and this includes Daniel as well. Daniel rightly is being criticised more so after the Wolves no show, but, you know, but for those two guys, Norwich fans wouldn't have had a season of Premier League football, because what they did in the Championship with that group of players under those financial restrictions was nothing short of remarkable. And I would use the word, which Daniel uses a lot, it was a miracle. It was a footballing miracle to get that group of players, having finished 15th in the Championship in their first season, with all the attendant financial issues and the drag off the pitch, to get them to the championship title was a phenomenal effort. And they're probably now discovering that how big a gulf that is on and off the park. And is it any wonder that two guys having their first tilt at the Premier League, both on and off the pitch, have maybe been wanting in certain areas? But I would still think, moving it forward, that they've proven just in their period of time at Carrow Road that you know, they are fast learners and they do have a clear objective where they want to take this club. And it still feels for me, despite the frustrations this season, it feels quite an exciting sort of direction of travel. You know, the whole thing about the infrastructure improvements at Colney, the sustainability going on there, the emphasis on youth players, the willingness of Daniel Farker to play youth players. You know, look, Max, I mean, Stuart said in that interview, actually, I think I'll get this right now, he said the 3 years they've been here at the club, him and Daniel, 2017 onwards, there's been more academy minutes on the pitch in that 3 years than in the previous 15 years. Yeah. You know, if you've got a self-sustainable or a self-funded model, that to me is a mark of success. And I think Norwich fans, while hugely frustrated at the minute, while probably accepting the inevitable that they'll be back in the Championship, should, in the round, because there's plenty of other examples littered across the Football League of clubs that are train wrecks, I think they should be pretty thankful that they've got Webber and Farker at the helm. And not excuse the deficiencies, which Stuart himself in that interview, you know, quite honestly and openly admitted, or Daniel for that matter. Not excuse that, but just accept the environment they've been dealing in this season and how tough it's been, and that if they go back down, they've said it all along, it's no mystery, they aim to establish this club as a top 26. Well, by definition, if you aim to establish your club as a top 26 in this country, you're essentially saying, until you break that cycle, you're either going to be in the top division, top 20, or you're going to be a top 6 aspirant club in the Championship going for promotion. So in that context, then it's not a huge surprise that they're probably going to bounce back down again, and hopefully with a view to going in again next season, as tough as that will be.
Absolutely. I don't think there's too many Norwich fans that would dispute the fact that a lot of the decisions are being made for the right reasons at the football club, and certainly off the pitch, the direction the club is moving in is honourable in a lot of ways, in the way they're trying to be sustainable and makes sense in many different ways. The messaging has been totally consistent from Stuart, from Daniel, from the club. For as soon as they got promoted, it was in sort of ultra realism, hasn't it? And I just wonder, and I'm saying this in hindsight now, really, because I wasn't saying it at the start of the season, to be perfectly honest. But now we're reaching this point, I just wonder whether constantly saying it was a miracle that we did it with this group of players, that, you know, we climbed Everest, whether that actually had a bit of a negative impact on the mentality on some of the players and hasn't empowered them in maybe the way that Chris Wilder has done, in terms of it's felt more like that they're on an adventure to prove people wrong, whereas Norwich have just maybe been a little bit too uber realistic, and that has maybe grounded things a little bit too much and killed a little bit of the adventure. The big thing for me is that Daniel and Stuart are on contracts until 2022. If they manage, which is not easy, as many clubs have found before, as Norwich have found before, they manage to shake off the hangover from relegation, they manage to get a squad together that can bounce straight back, they get back in the Premier League in what will be a healthy financial situation then, or relative to this current situation, because they will have a bit more money to spend, they will be able to come up in a more positive way. Should they manage to both keep Norwich in the Premier League in 2022, Daniel can go off to Dortmund because he's left Norwich in the top half of the Premier League, Stuart can disappear off to Spain or whatever, all the fans will wish them goodbye, hopefully the expansion of Carrow Road is on the horizon, that has got to be the sort of dream. If that doesn't happen, if they can't manage that, they stay in the Championship next year and everything falls apart, which would be really sad to see given the journey that we've been on this last couple of years and the way we've seen things unfold, then the questions are going to turn back to the boardroom, aren't they? And fans are going to ask whether it's possible in the current English game to become established in the Premier League as a self-funded club, because the only example we've really got to turn to is Burnley, and Norwich are the antithesis of Burnley in terms of playing style on the pitch. they've done it because they have done it in an old school way. They've played long ball football. They've got big defenders. They bash their way to points week in, week out. They're not trying to play continental stylish football. So it's a real sort of crossroads, turning point, whatever analogy you want to put on it. And it's going to be a really interesting year on from here. Although I am talking as if they've gone down, which we're not allowed to do officially yet. Yeah. But based on what we saw on Sunday, you kind of have to a bit.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. I think what I would add is that it's perfectly okay as a supporter. I think it's a unique situation in many ways because it's perfectly okay to be proud and be happy with the way they've tried to do things this year and that how they have tried to break conventions and equally to look up at Sheffield United and to feel a bit envious and to say, well, that's the way it could have gone. That's the way perhaps that it should have gone had this have been done or that have been done. And equally, you can look in the other direction and look down in Suffolk and the way that things are going there and it, be equally boastful about that. And they probably fall into the category of club that Paddy described earlier.
We will in November when they're 10 years unbeaten.
Exactly.
Hopefully. That could still be tested, couldn't it? If Ipswich come up and Norwich go down, we'll probably have a derby before then. Anyway, I digress.
Well, exactly. But I think that's perfectly acceptable because even though the likelihood is they're going to get relegated and, as you said earlier, the possibility in the office that they could be the worst Norwich City side in the Premier League, there's a lot of positivity to take from this season still. They have, for the most part, played fairly well. They've been competitive in the majority of games, perhaps Molineux, Anfield and Old Trafford aside, maybe Villa at home as well. I think supporters can be proud at what they're doing and what they're trying to do. But yeah, it does raise further questions, I think, about the ownership and stuff. But for me, I'll certainly park that until we see them either respond. Well, it depends on how they respond to go down, but certainly if they come back up and the same situation happens again, then I think certainly those questions will be asked. And equally, it could go the other way and they could go down, and the Championship is an impossible, is a really difficult league to get out of, one of the toughest in world football. And if they do manage to bounce back up and they do manage to replicate the path that Burnley forged, then I think that for everyone involved would be a massive achievement and a massive, massive achievement. They feel proud of that. And if the club is in the situation that you outlined when Weber and Farker, if they do decide to leave, if there is in that situation, then I think it proves it can be done. And I think it will certainly set a mould for other clubs to follow. And we sort of saw that a little bit at the start of the year when clubs were embarking with new coaches on different projects only to ditch them halfway through. So they are trying to do something completely different. I think, as Stuart said, they haven't got everything right. They were never going to get everything right, particularly after the success of last season. They were probably due a few recruitment errors, which we've seen this year. If they come back, they're going to have if they persist with Daniel Farker, which the likelihood they would, if they did bounce back from the Championship, absolutely they would. Then they're going to have a coach who's had one season in the Premier League. They're going to have a sporting director who's been in the Premier League as well. So they're only going to be stronger for that experience. And as Paddy said, I think Norwich fans on the whole, in terms of the direction of travel, in terms of who they've got at the helm, are very pleased with it. I think it's just a tad disappointing at what we've seen on the pitch. But that's football, I guess. And it's never guaranteed, and you said about terminology, I think you're right. I think they have been perhaps a bit safe with it, a little bit grateful, maybe a bit too grateful to be where they are. If they want to become a top 26 club, then they have to embrace that, and that means tackling the Premier League at one point to try and progress it, because there's only going to be a certain amount of time, as with any football fan, that you accept your club being somewhere before you want them to progress. That's the nature of football, and it is so short term. But now, I think if they do go down, and we have to keep saying if they do, but the likelihood is they will, then I think the next 2 years are going to be the real test of this project and how they view the long-term future at Norwich City.
They'll go and beat Leicester now, won't they?
Yeah, probably.
For all that we've been said, for all the gnashing of teeth in real life and online, they'll go and do it. But because the players are probably going to be really wound up by everything they've heard
post-Sunday.
Well, I mean, I'm sure the players don't listen to the podcast. I would kind of hope that they don't in a way, because they shouldn't really, should they? They should
get in
be...
touch, Emmy. Get in touch.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. That would just be a real cat among the pigeons, wouldn't it? But you never know. Football's a funny old game. Thank you very much, chaps. Thank you very much for listening. The Pinken YouTube channel is probably the best place to go if you want to catch up on any of the stuff we've mentioned. That's Stuart Webber, exclusive interview, Tim Close, a lot more. And of course, pinken.com for all the latest Norwich City news and views. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch up with you very soon.